This is an ad by BetterHelp. Alyssa, men's mental health is something that has been very stigmatized.
Yes.
And just because it is something that is stigmatized doesn't mean that it's not something that is necessary.
And that's right.
As June is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month, we wanted to draw attention to that. Men face enormous pressure to perform, to provide, keep it all together. So it's no wonder that 6 million men in the U.S. suffer from depression every year, and it's often undiagnosed. It's okay to struggle. Real strength comes from opening up about what you're carrying and doing something about it so you can be at your best for yourself and everyone in your life. If you're a man and you're feeling the weight of the world, talk to someone, anyone, a friend, a loved one, a therapist. I have to say, I'm not a man.
No, me neither.
Sorry.
As
a non-man, I did grow up in a culture and was raised by a generation of people that did not necessarily embrace mental health care or being proactive about mental health care. And as an adult, I kind of went into adulthood thinking like it was something that only weak people do. Like, oh, if you're just complaining, you just need to pay someone to listen, you complain. But like when I started going to therapy, it really helped me notice the way I was moving through the world and notice when I was doing things that were maladaptive or harmful or not good for me and be able to like stop it instead of just like being on autopilot all the time, making the same mistakes over and over again. I mean, I'm not perfect. Nobody is. But going to therapy helped me identify what my patterns were, interrupt those patterns when I needed to, and to move forward in a more positive direction. And I strongly believe that it can help you do that too.
I agree. Same here. I do cognitive behavioral therapy and it helps me identify my anxiety triggers.
That is that's a really good one. Waking up at 4 a.m. and looking at the clock is
that one I can identify pretty clearly.
Yeah, that's pretty clearly. I think 4:35. Did we identify the worst time to be awake because of anxiety in the night?
I think the fours are particularly bad.
The fours are a bad time. Right. But you know what? With therapy, I realized that I should not look at my phone when that happens. I just need to go to bed.
Be quiet.
Just close your eyes. Close your eyes. With over 35,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people globally. And it works with an app store rating of 4.9 out of 5 based on over 1.7 million client reviews. It's convenient, too. You can join a session with a therapist at the click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life. Plus, switch therapists at any time.
As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a diverse variety of expertise. Talk it out with BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/HysteriaPod. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/HysteriaPod.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, a new bombshell has entered the villa.
And a bombshell?
And by bombshell, I mean war. And by the villa, I mean the Middle East.
Oh, I wish people would have gone to his fucking birthday party.
I know. Can we, next time he throws some big dumb party, let's be like, yay.
MAGA, you did this, okay?
You're awesome. Yay.
You showed no fortitude.
Yeah.
You did not take out your lawn chairs and show up at his military parade, and now many people are paying the price.
And now, look what's happened. The Iran nuclear program has been set back literal months.
Months. Months.
Good job. Good job. I wonder how many school lunches were in those bombs that we dropped that didn't really do anything.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. We should just think of like bombs we drop on foreign countries in terms of school lunches that we could be feeding children in America.
It's not bad.
Just thinking. Or like months of paid childcare or, you know, healthcare. Whatever.
Better schools.
It's fine. He got to push his buttons and drop his bombs and feel like a big man. So we have a lot that we get into today, and it is a wide-ranging show. We talk about the news. We talk about the New York City mayoral race. We talk a little bit about Turning Point USA did a young women's conference, and for some reason, Charlie Kirk was there.
Nothing like a 31-year-old man convening a lot of women.
I mean, look, two of the most popular people in the young manosphere, Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn, are 57 and 45 years old, respectively. So guys that are too old to be there is kind of like the thing on the, on the conservative right. We also talk a little bit about the Jeff Bezos, Lauren Sanchez wedding.
Banchez,
the two people who are like least good at reading the room. Then we also have a special guest this week.
Chelsea Clinton
joins, and she is absolutely delightful, and we're so glad that we had a chance to chat with her. And finally, you know, per usual, we talk a little bit about doomsday prepping. We talk a little Sani Petty. We've got a whole variety of things we're talking about
this
week.
It's a grab bag.
Stick around. It's a great show. All right, you're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who didn't rank Cuomo.
Right.
Alyssa, congratulations are in order for you. A part-time New York City resident.
Cuomo.
Part-time New York City residents, I want to offer you my sincere congratulations as a former New York City resident. Congratulations on not selecting a dog shit Democratic mayoral nominee.
Listen, I want to actually give a nice little shout out to Mike Blake, who was one of the many people running for mayor. I have known Blake since 2007. He's a great guy, assemblyman from like the 79th district up in the Bronx. And he also represented last night. And he's a very good guy. And I want to say congratulations to him, too.
Well, you know, you know what makes you feel old? When you watch the Olympics and you're like, they're all young enough to be my children. Another thing that makes you feel old is when somebody who's like, you wouldn't even have been in school at the same time, is elected, is the front runner for mayor in New York City. Zoran Mamdani is
33.
Good for him.
He's 33.
Good for him. And you know what? I gotta say, if Times Square hadn't gone total edgelord, I would say that it probably was a fun place to be last night. I also wanted to talk a little bit, you know, it's kind of fallen out of the headlines because of the whole, like, war in the Middle East and all that, and Trump and the NATO summit and blah, 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 blah. There's always something. But, like, ICE is still in
LA. Still out there. Yep.
Bothering people. They were in, there's a bar in my neighborhood called the Hermosillo that I actually go to quite a bit. So I'm, you know, and I've run into listeners there, which is funny.
So nice.
Yeah, but outside of the Hermosillo, there's like this big kind of beer garden area, and it's really family friendly. So every Friday, Saturday, Sunday afternoon before it starts getting dark, it's like people with their strollers, people with their kids. It's like parents hanging out. It's a place where there's like families. So last week, a bunch of like plainclothes people came in and started harassing women who looked Hispanic, and they were saying they're from the Bureau of Alcohol or whatever, and they were trying to get their IDs and stuff. The bar was like, we didn't know about this. Like, it's fucking crazy. We don't know.
This is all the laws we learned. Entrapment. Like, what the fuck is this?
It's crazy. So we don't, but here's the thing. Like, because ICE is so unprofessional and they don't identify themselves and they just look like a bunch of like gangs of thugs going around kidnapping people. There's still confusion about who those people were.
Of course.
Who those people were. They could have been like human traffickers. You know, like they could have just been like freelance criminals.
Absolutely.
Like, we don't know who they were. The bar has put out a statement that's like, we didn't know they were there. Also, like, fuck ICE. ICE is not welcome, blah, 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 blah. But like, they're just like going around bothering people. I don't know if they were ICE. But we don't know if they were ICE because
that's
ICE just,
the problem.
Like, it's crazy.
You do not know who these people are. There is no identification ever anywhere.
No, and we don't.
There are no badge numbers.
There are no badges. No badge numbers. They're covering their faces. Mm-hmm. I predict that at some point there will be a story that reveals the reason that they're doing that, and it's not because they're afraid of being doxxed. Because like National Guard members that are like clashing with protesters aren't covering their faces. Police officers who are engaging in like aggressive behavior with journalists and protesters, they're not covering their faces. Why are these people covering their faces? You know.
Right. And also, police have badge numbers. Like, it's who you are dealing with. There can be recourse. This is shady as hell. This is some malevolent Barney Fife citizens arrest type like shit going on.
It's really crazy. And there's a part of me that's like, because they're so loosey-goosey with identifying themselves and they kind of just, like, are dressed in, like, a tactical costume. Like, if you just search tactical on Amazon.
But army surplus. Right. I mean, it feels like that's exactly where it's all coming from.
Exactly. There's a part of me that's like, if it wouldn't further terrorize communities, to just have a bunch of like white guys in town dress up like ICE people and like hang out in parking lots. So when ICE gets there, they're like, oh, they're already here. All right. You know, or like have the people that are in danger of being abducted by ICE put on the ICE costumes.
Right.
And they'll be like, hey, we got it. We got it, buddy. Like this whole Home Depot parking lot. We're all ICE guys. I mean,
speaking of the New York primary, it was just last week, I think, that Brad Lander, who was one of the men running for and comptroller for the city of New York, was kidnapped, was by people who looked exactly like what you were talking about. Like just sweatpants, gray T-shirts, hats on backwards. Like. What?
They just were randomly kidnapping him, and he just asked for a warrant.
It looked like Hayes Week on Fraternity Row.
I have to say this: something that like is really infuriating to me is so like we have Fox News on in the office, and I don't know. Some people I think are able to like handle it being, but it was like it like makes me sick to my stomach to hear it. Like there will be video evidence of what's happening, like when Lander was taken into custody after asking for a warrant. Like they're playing the footage on Fox News and like lying about what the footage was.
Totally.
Like they, and when like Senator Padilla got like tackled after identifying himself and trying to ask a question of Kristi Noem, whose face just did not move the entire time. She's just like a complete robot looking
totally.
Like monster robot. There was video evidence of like what happened, you know, and like she went on Fox News to talk about it and was like describing what she said happened and it didn't happen. They're so cocky about just being able to like weave their own reality among people. They're like, you didn't see that. That's not what you're seeing. I feel like I'm engaged in like a psychological experiment. And also, I have to say this, like there have been rumors of ICE going around and of here's something that happened to a friend of a friend, verified.
Okay.
So she lives on the west side of LA and she has a nanny that is an Italian American, has a green card, and her husband are both from Italy. Agents, like police officers, quote unquote, showed up at their door at like 6 a.m. and said that they were looking for information about previous tenants. If that ever happens to you, whoever you are, or if you know somebody that could happen, don't let them in. Like, why are you here at 6 a.m? Why are you asking about
previous
tenants?
Why is this like a Giuliani no-knock warrant? Like, what
on
earth?
These people are like fucking, they're like vampires. They're literally coming, they're coming up to people's doors. They can lie. They can legally lie. And they're like, they ended up like letting them in and they questioned the people that lived there, even though they were quote unquote looking for information about previous tenants. They're like, it's really, they're awful. They're just harassing people. And it's still happening. And it's because of like Stephen Miller's dumb quota, which makes no sense. Turns out this country isn't teeming with criminals who are here without documentation. Turns out most of them are just trying to live. And like, they're just, oh God, I really need there to be some sort of like comeuppance for ICE because it's just fucking evil shit. Just evil dipshits. That's my
scary
piece about.
Scary, it's terrorism.
It is. It is like a terrorism campaign against Latinos. It fucking sucks.
And it's ongoing.
The anger that I felt about this is like greater than the anger I felt about anything, because it's like, you know, when things are happening far away from you, you can watch and be like, God, I'm so fucking mad about that. That sucks. But it's like when it comes to your front door, it's a specific, different type of anger that comes with like the immediacy of it happening around you and to people that you know. And like, that fuck ICE. Fuck them.
Okay.
Anyway, and speaking of people who can fuck right off.
Oh, well, Aaron.
Like that segue, Alyssa.
It seems. Earlier this month, Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk's conservative student group, hosted its 10th annual Young Women's Leadership Summit. Aaron, Charlie Kirk is a 31-year-old man.
I always think we should point that out. He's a 31-year-old man being like, hey, college people.
Hey, college girls.
Take it from me, a man in his 30s. I know what's hip. Anyway, go on.
Well, I mean, to your point, 3,000 women in their teens and early 20s attended the summit.
Nothing weird about that.
A record for the organization. The thesis of the event seemed to be that women need to ditch any feminist ideals and get married and have baby as soon as possible, or else Or else what, Erin? Or else sadness.
Fair. Yep, that's true.
Sadness.
Or else sadness.
At one point, Kirk addressed the crowd and asked, and this is a direct quote, "How many of you, every single day, is your purpose for being finding a husband?" And he said, "Every hand should go up."
Oh, girls, no. 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 Like,
can you? I actually watched some of the different, the Q&A that went on that I saw on Instagram. He is, this is some stuff, Erin. This is some, like, I don't even know that Phyllis Schlafly would abide this.
I mean, it's a 31-year-old dude. Like, think
right.
about the
Phyllis would be like, get out of my way.
Like, at least someone like Leonard Leo, like a money man who is very egotistical, obviously,
right?
Has the foresight and the self-discipline to be like, you know what? Maybe I'm not the best spokesperson
right.
for this. You know, and
right.
Charlie Kirk is like, me!
Move
like,
over!
He's like Elle Woods, like getting into Harvard. Me!
Like, it's hard.
Yeah. It's like, you should shut the fuck up. But, I mean, go ahead and talk, because I think that you're undermining your whole raison d'etre here. But, like, what are you doing, Charlie? What are you doing?
He's making his own prom.
He's a man in his 30s telling young women how to live. Like, anyway, sorry, I'm interrupting your spiel.
No, that was it. It's not a real spiel. That was it. You know, they had some big name speakers. They had Alex Clark, they had Brett Cooper. You know, the young women are coming out. Erin, they want to get together. They want a conference. They want to talk about being conservative and MAHA and making it healthy and making it hot. And I mean, you know.
Yeah. I think, like, this is one of the reasons why I think Democrats need to, like, really let their hot people talk a lot. Because there's, like, a lot of sexy Democrats, I think, and we need to be sexy as well. This is a controversial opinion that I have.
I was not judging the opinion. I was trying to, visualize the hot people.
AOC.
Sure.
Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
We've got a couple, like, younger guys, too. Like,
see, but I think
you're
of them,
new, the number one mayoral candidate.
Respectful.
The number one winner of votes in the Democratic primary in the NYC mayoral race. Also kind of hot. I'm going to say that. I find him a little hot. Okay. So some of the stuff from this, the write-up of this Turning Points USA, like Charlie Kirk's Club for Upwardly Mobile Girls or whatever. Some of the quotes that really stood out to me was some first-time attendees told me that they had been radicalized by the pandemic with its mask mandates, lockdowns, and what they saw as arbitrary social distancing restrictions. Quote, "I want to protect female athletes," Katarina Discomo, an Oakland University chapter leader for the right-wing campus group Network for Enlightened Women, said. "It did not appear to matter that transgender women make up less than 0.002% of athletes at the college level. Most of these women said they had never met a transgender person before."
Yeah,
this is a great example of, Alyssa, something that I think we should point out about a lot of, like, media coverage of what right-wing people say. They fucking lie about things. Like, there is no, like, you can't take them at their word. Like, I do not think that Katarina Discomo wants to protect female athletes. I think that is a sentence that she's decided is something that is an okay thing to say out loud. Mm-hmm. I think underneath sentences like, "I want to protect female athletes," is a desire to erase trans people. Like, truly, truly. Because I don't believe that she wants to protect female athletes. What sport do you play, Katarina? What sport?
What sport do you watch? What sport do you even know the rules of?
You love women's sports so much. Like, name four WNBA teams and not the Indiana Fever.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? These people are, they're, this is like a line that is pre-fed to them that people in the media take, and they're like, well, they just want to protect college athletes. No, they don't. It's like during the run-up to the election when people were like, well, I'm worried about the economy. It's like, you are not worried about the economy. You are using the economy as an excuse to, like, mask. It is your acceptable reason that you put out to mask the real reason that you don't want to vote for Kamala Harris, which is that you would rather be called racial slurs by a white man than call a black woman your boss. Like, that's it. And so this is just like, I think that we need to, when we see these statements and pieces like this, and I know that I'm off like on a tangent and I'm ranting, but when we see statements like this from people that are attending places like the Turning Point USA, people who physically traveled to a another location to listen to Charlie Kirk talk about how the people there should have babies and find husbands. Mm-hmm. Girls who are in college, by the way. Like, yeah.
Right. He did. What isn't his one of the Q&As, he said that everyone there should be working to get their MRS.
Yeah.
That was one of the questions and the Q&As that happened at that time.
And there's also a thing that is like they're trying to kind of massage the message, which is another quote from the article. Brett Cooper, the 23-year-old YouTuber who's very popular, Cooper attempted to thread the needle in her speech. You do not have to stay at home and make sourdough starter every day, she said, comparing the trad wife aesthetic to the same black and white framework created by lean-in girl boss feminism. What? No, it didn't. This is what she said. You will fall somewhere between those two poles of stay-at-home motherhood and pursuing a career. You can build a life that is uniquely yours. Oh, wow.
Wow.
What a unique concept.
What?
Does that sound
like feminism?
That sounds like literally feminism. And what are you doing? Like,
is she going to say you can drive a car too?
I mean, if they made cars for women, you could drive a car. And it's like, that's like the nuanced message. That's like nuanced messaging. It's like, yeah, that's what we've been saying.
It's the whole enchilada.
That's literally what we've been saying. During a Q&A, this is something that, like, made me laugh. During a Q&A with Charlie Kirk on the last day of the summit, gotta save the fucking headliner heartthrob. God, he really wants to be in a boy band, right?
Someone just let him do one tour with the Jonas Brothers so he can go away. It's like Stephen Miller wanted to be popular in high school and he wants to be in a boy band.
I mean, maybe one thing that would be a good use of AI would be AI kind of analyzing what these annoying right-wing men are saying and using that to construct a virtual reality experience for them that will fill the needs that they have that didn't get filled. Like, clearly Charlie Kirk wants to be in a boy band.
That's a great idea.
Ted Cruz wants to be a movie star. He wants to be a movie star. So can we create that experience for him without us having to participate in it, you know?
Yes. It's like back in 2007, the SEIU had this thing called the walk-a-day where all the presidential candidates had to spend a day with an SEIU worker. Mm-hmm. They should just do a walk-a-day for all of these people. It's like Ted Cruz. You get to go to a movie. You get to go to a film set. You get to pretend.
You get to be the star.
Submersed.
Right.
You know, you'll have a chair with your name on it. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we can get on with, like, life.
Yes. Maybe you can just get out of the Senate and live in your virtual reality world where you are a beloved—
Does he still have a podcast?
—and charismatic movie star. I don't know. I hope not.
Does.
Anyway, so there's this— Charlie Kirk, the heartthrob of this whole thing. He was asked— by an attendee, if Kirk, quote, could clarify what the mission of the summit is. It's a young women's leadership summit, the student said, and all the women who spoke on stage were there because they pursued a career. And a key takeaway I took from most of the speeches was that I should get married and have babies. Kirk seemed perturbed by the question. I could flip it on you. The people who have careers are telling you to have kids, he said, so maybe they know something you don't know.
What?
No, they don't have kids, so they literally don't know. They literally, there is way more
people
they don't know.
People paid for this.
Like, they don't, the people paid for this.
People paid for this.
But, like, a career person who doesn't have kids telling you to have kids is full of shit. Absolutely full of shit.
Yeah.
Because there's just no, I'm going to say, I'm a career woman who has kids, and it's fucking hard. Having kids is hard, and it is not relaxing, and it is not an alternative to burnout, and it is not an alternative to working hard. And, like, honestly, I think that the pretending that having kids and, like, being a mom and staying home and being a homemaker or whatever, or focusing mainly on your kids is not a soft life. It is a hard life, and pretending that it is soft is really devaluing the labor of parenting and the labor of homemaking, because that's, like, legit labor. But whatever. I could,
have kids, but I homemake, and my homemaking is hard work.
But you would never, like go on a stage and be like,
no,
hey,
I wouldn't. No, I mean, of course I wouldn't. I'm just saying.
Take it from me, I'm a lady that doesn't have kids. You should have kids. Like, you wouldn't do that. You know?
I mean, no, I would, it would be absurd. It would be an absurd thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Today, today is what I would call Kim, there's people that are dying. Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez, celebrity couple Banchez. Does
I
that
love
work?
It. For me.
It sounds like, I don't know, maybe there's a better one. Banchez attempted to keep their offensively expensive wedding under wraps, but we've known since March that the couple was planning a multi-day, multi-million-dollar fete in Vegas for late June. So it should be any day now. Isn't it both of their second weddings?
Venice.
Oh. Where did I say?
You said Vegas.
Oh, Venice.
Made sense.
That would be so funny.
That would be hilarious. And I would actually, if they did their wedding in Vegas, I'd be like, you know what?
That's cool. You understood yourselves.
That's actually cool. Like, I get it. It's your second wedding. No, they're having their wedding in Venice in late June. So it should be any day now. The couple already had a party for Sanchez's son's 19th birthday on a $500 million super yacht in Croatia. Wow, that 19-year-old is definitely not going to turn into some kind of fucking nightmare. The birthday party theme was foam.
This was weird.
They threw her son a foam party on her boyfriend's yacht. Foam, meaning they use soap to create a lot of bubbles to play in, which is a premise one normally associates with spring break parties linked to hepatitis B outbreaks.
Also, I'm just saying, if the party was really for her son, I don't know.
That's so weird.
She didn't dress like it was her son's birthday party.
Oh, you know what? You know Madison Humphrey on yeah, I feel like Madison Humphrey would have a fun parody version of
I mean, that. Just saying.
Just putting it out there, Madison, if you're listening. Leading up to the wedding, a collage of sources have reported different details about the exact dates or places where the wedding would take place. Rumors swirl they were renting out the entire city of Venice and reserving water taxis and gondolas en masse, triggering protests under the No Space for Bezos movement. They made giant signs with his big dumb head on it. Which I, you know, respect for the Italians. You know that something's really bad if the Italians are like, you know what? I'm going to get up and do something.
You did too far. Yes. Too much.
Both city officials and the wedding planners have denied that the wedding would take over the city completely and claimed there are only 200 guests. But this isn't just any 200 guest wedding. This one is estimated to attract 95 planes to the city's small airport.
They can't carpool on their PJs. And by PJs, I mean private jets, not jammies.
I know. It's like, seriously, PJs. I like that. One banner that protesters hung up read, if you can rent Venice for your wedding, you can pay more tax. Fair. They also threatened to fill the canals with inflatable crocodiles to block the celebrity guests from entering their originally planned venue. Protesters claimed a victory when the couple changed the location of the wedding from the Scuola Grande della Misericordia in the city center to a historic shipyard complex surrounded by fortified walls.
That sounds romantic.
What says romance more than being surrounded by impenetrable walls?
Fortified walls.
Alyssa, can money buy class?
No. No. No, it cannot. It absolutely, all weddings over $1 million prove the point.
And I feel like this cuts across cultures. Like, I'm sorry.
There is no.
If it's causing, it's ridiculous. Absolutely not. Oh, my God. Ridiculous. And it's their second wedding. Both of their second weddings.
It's like, it's just, it's a come on.
I wish they were doing it in Vegas. I wish they, like, rented out the strip.
It would be so
I'd be
funny.
Like, that is very funny. And if they really played it up and they had, like, they actually reanimated Elvis in order to do the ceremony for them. They don't have an impersonator. They reanimated him. I also want to reflect on the fact that nobody has ever won a divorce more spectacularly than Mackenzie Scott, Jeff Bezos' first wife, who is just flying around like Robin Hood, dropping million-dollar
gifts.
She's
not spending money like on fortified walls.
She's giving all her money away. And what's really funny to me is I think that like Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez are combined like the two most tone-deaf didn't read the room people. Like, I think that they I think exist. They are so, like, between sending Lauren up in her, like, little Blue Origin Barbie costume.
Oh, look, I am no Donald Trump fan, but the inauguration outfit was just, read the room.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Crazy. And then they sent
out. Bustiers. Bustiers aren't for the rotunda.
No. I wish that could be our episode title. Bustiers aren't for the rotunda.
They're not for the rotunda.
You know, I also think, like, they released a statement that's like, hey, guests, like, this, like, is something that went public. Hey, guests, please don't give us gifts. We're just happy you're here. We're going to make a big donation to, like, all these charities. And it's like, you know, it would be better to just not do it at all. Like, you know, all those private jets flying in to celebrate your wedding, like,
all those beaches,
like, annoying the people who live in Venice. Like, maybe it'd be better if you didn't do it at all. Like, I don't care if you're, and also the amount of money they're giving to Venice related charities better be equal or greater than the amount of money they're spending on the wedding. Otherwise, it doesn't fucking matter.
Oh, Aaron, you know, it's just a drop in the aqueduct. I mean, there's nothing.
I mean, it's just so, like, they are doing the least. And, like, I think that they are, like, maybe so isolated from real public opinion, or, like, deliberately so, or just because of the orbit they're in. But, like, they just don't seem to understand, like, this doesn't do anything. This is not going to solve anything.
This,
you know?
Also, is it going to make your – this is what I always think is so interesting about these, like, gargantuan, ostentatious weddings. Well, if you do this for your wedding, is it all downhill afterwards? Like, what is the actual point of something this garish?
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
like, is it to just prove the point? We know how rich you are. Everybody knows. You both know how rich you both are.
You know what's funny to me is, like, they have so much money, and Lauren Sanchez ostensibly has access to so much money. She should look like Jane Fonda. You know what I mean? Her face shouldn't be like that. She should have
gorgeous,
better, like,
perfect
plastic surgery. You should be like that. That is
at least,
like,
Kris Jenner.
At least Kris Jenner. Like, you were like, oh, girl, what are you doing? Like, you were
no,
pretty.
No, it's a,
like,
Halloween mask.
She was plenty beautiful before she did anything. Like, she was a beautiful
Seems
woman.
Seems like she and Kristi Noem share some things.
Yeah.
Some, like, medical professionals, perhaps, in common.
But it's like, it's a, as a person who is never going to be rich, it is offensive to me when I see rich people looking that bad. I'm like, the least you can do is look better than everybody else. Like, the least you can do is be pretty to me, you know?
Right.
You have so much at your disposal, and it is at all of our expense. And the least you could do is be fucking pretty.
They've caricatured themselves.
I know. It's so ridiculous. Just for informational purposes, do we know what the ship-destroying Mediterranean orcas are up to over the next several days?
Oh, something tells me they're getting their Turning Point USA conference getting going.
The TPUSA conference.
They're
butt of orcas that destroy yachts.
Butt of orcas that destroy yachts.
I would rather attend that.
I'm telling you.
I think if Charlie Kirk attended that, I'd be fine with it.
They're going to find a reef to restore, and then they're going to just head on in and do some damage.
Okay, final question in this Bezos segment. Given their track record for aggressive and tone-deaf, tacky gestures and actions in a world increasingly hostile to billionaires, what stunt do you predict that our beloved it couple of tone-deafness will try next?
Oh, God, Aaron, I don't know. What could it possibly be? What's left?
I think racehorses.
Oh,
like, and being like, oh, this is our racehorse, like, being all like,
okay,
in like, you know,
race, okay, they're gonna make, okay, they're yeah, gonna you know what, I gonna, could see that
they're gonna clone Secretariat and have a farm of only Secretariats,
oh,
and then they're
shit.
Gonna be like, and Secretariettas or whatever the girl version of Secretariat is, and they're gonna be like, look at our cool farm, isn't it great what we're doing for horses, and we're all gonna be like, shut the fuck up.
Then they'll buy Ballerina Farm, and that's where they'll put all the horses, and everything will have come full circle.
They will buy Ballerina Farm and literally farm ballerinas. Okay. On that note, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Chelsea Clinton.
Mm.
Hysteria is brought to you by Manicora. Are you looking for something simple and delicious to add to your wellness routine?
Erin, Manicure legitimately changed my life.
It is so good.
It's so good. And it actually, I read a lot of people talking about Manicure and how it can help your gut biome. And I had a real issue with my gut biome and some reflux issues. And I started taking a teaspoon of Manicure honey twice a day. Genuinely helped.
It is so good. It's like, it doesn't even seem like, it should be in a better category than the rest of the honey. And I love honey.
It's like the most special honey.
I love honey. But it is like a cut above. It is, it's like creamy and rich, and the taste is sweet, but not cloying.
It's not cloying. It's nice spread on a little buttered toast. It's good in tea, like I do, straight from the container.
You know what? I have also just put it in hot water. And just drink.
Really?
Some, like,
yeah, well, of course.
Hot, sweet water. When I'm feeling very lazy and don't want to go get the tea. It's really good. You can also drizzle it on like a little dessert. You can put it in like a peanut
It's literally
butter sandwich.
For everything.
It's for everything. It's for everything. Probably not tomato sauce. I wouldn't put it on tomato sauce.
Who knows? People put a little sugar in tomato sauce.
Yes, they do. Well, you know what? I'm going to have to give it a try.
There you go.
Manicure honey is rich, creamy, and the most delicious honey you've ever had. It's ethically produced by Manicure's master beekeepers in the remote forests of New Zealand. Alyssa, new career goal for you.
Listen,
master beekeeper.
You know that we were supposed to go to New Zealand. We were supposed to go to New Zealand on our honeymoon.
Go steal someone's identity. Find a master beekeeper and, like, talented Mr. Ripley them.
And then maybe I can do Meghan Markle's bees.
Maybe. Manicure honey contains powerful nutrients to support immunity and gut health. The bees collect the nectar from the Manuka tree in New Zealand. The nectar is packed with bioactives, and the honey that is produced has 3 times more antioxidants and prebiotics than your average honey.
A special antibacterial compound called MGO also comes from the nectar of the tea tree. Manicure third-party tests every single harvest for MGO and makes these results available through their QR system. It's a game changer. All you need is 1 heaped teaspoon each morning to get the most out of the amazing bioactives in Manuka. Additional usage throughout the day is completely fine, especially helping to cut out other sweeteners. It's a honey with superpowers. Now it's easier than ever to try Manicure honey. Head to manicure.com/hysteria to save up to 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts with the starter kit, which comes with an MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar, 5 honey travel sticks, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. That's manicure.com/hysteria to save 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for vaccine enthusiasts. Alyssa,
I gotta
tell you who isn't a vaccine enthusiast, though.
Who?
My 1-year-old. She had to get She had to get 2 vaccines yesterday. Was not a happy camper. She looked at me like I had punched her after she got the vaccine. Like, how could you?
The cats are not a vaccine enthusiasts either, but it's for their own good.
Mom! Ah! Like, she was so angry. But you know what? Necessary. This is why
necessary.
We're parents. We got to make the decisions that the kids don't want to make. This week's guest is Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea is an advocate, the vice chair of the Clinton Foundation, and teaches at Columbia's Mailman School of Public Health. She's joining us today to talk about what health advocacy looks like in the Trump-Maha era and the state of reproductive health care. Chelsea, we are so happy to have you on Hysteria.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I also am a huge vaccine enthusiast. And so, you know, I really feel like part of being a parent is helping our kids understand when they have agency and choice and when they don't.
Yes. Totally.
And like, you know, yes, like you could cut your hair however you want. It may not be my choice, but I'm going to let you choose what to do with the mop on top of your head. And also, you must get your vaccines on time.
I can tell you've had this conversation, yeah. Chelsea.
Yes, yes. And also would say I really never understood when people would like quibble about like, oh, no, you can't bribe your children. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. If they're really brave during like their annual well child visits or the multiple ER trips I've taken with my youngest, like you do get that extra scoop of ice cream. Like, that's okay.
100%. You know what? We did potty training 100% bribe-based, and it worked, you know? Sometimes you just got to bribe them.
What was your bribe of choice?
She got 1 M&M every time she went to every time she
some low stakes. That's a low stakes bribe.
Every time she physically would use her, like, she would go, even if she sat on it, We'd be like, oh, you get an M&M. And she did abuse the system a little bit, but it worked. So you know what? I'm fully on team bribe here. Chelsea, let's get started by talking a little bit about the Clinton Foundation strategy in supporting reproductive health care in a post-Dobbs America. I know that's a tiny little question, but, you know, what's the approach there?
You know, well, like we're talking, right, like sadly more than 3 years, just 3 years after the Dobbs decision, in which we effectively lost like a fundamental human right in this country, and where we also effectively, you know, said to doctors, like, you actually are not able to use your expertise and all of your training to really be able to, like, provide the care that you know your patients need. And so, you know, 3 years after that tragically existential decision, we have seen the real effects of denying women the right to make the choices that we know are best for ourselves, our bodies, our families, and not only inhibiting, but prohibiting in many states the ability of doctors to provide the care that they know patients need. And so we've seen, you know, enormous amounts of human suffering and also, you know, tragically the loss of life, where abortion isn't just considered as it should be, like a part of the continuum of healthcare. And so at the Clinton Foundation, we're engaged in a lot of different work to support efforts at the state level to ensure that doctors are able to provide the care that they know is medically indicated, medically necessary to save a woman's life, to save her health, to save her for future fertility. You know, a lot of effort to help ensure that women in whatever state we're living in are able to access the care that we need. A lot of work now in kind of this new Trump era to help support efforts or engage directly in efforts to ensure that people working in emergency rooms know that the federal law of the land, EMTALA, actually still requires them to provide emergency abortion care, regardless of kind of what the White House's opinions on that may be. The federal law trumps, like, whatever, you know, might be said from the lectern of the White House briefing room. Supporting efforts now to ensure that we're still collecting data on pregnancy and postpartum experiences of women. One of the many ways in which the Trump administration has tried to kind of impede our ability to know what's happening in our country is to kind of have taken down and then put back up and then kind of stopped the uploading of new data to something called the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System. Mm-hmm. So we don't actually have a unified snapshot, at least backed by the government, of what it means to be pregnant in this country, who are having complications, who may tragically be dying in childbirth or in the immediate aftermath of childbirth. And so working with academic partners and others to still try to collect that data so that even if the government isn't providing what I think is a public good, like a snapshot of what it means to be pregnant in America and who's having healthy pregnancies, who's not, who's really suffering, who may be dying, we're at least hoping that other institutions can really fill that gap until hopefully at some point in the future, the federal government realizes that once again, that is like not only within its purview, but actually like what we should expect out of it. Mm-hmm.
Chelsea, do you have any stories from your work on the ground of people affected by the loss of reproductive freedom?
Oh, so many. I mean, so many. Certainly, particularly, you know, in the weeks after the Trump administration really doing what they do so well, just causing like mass confusion so that people are spending so much time trying to figure out kind of what is real and what is not real. You know, the number of providers working in emergency rooms who, you know, are questioning whether or not they can provide the care. And that's happening, you know, in blue and red states alike. That's happening in rural hospitals and urban hospitals. That's happening in like tertiary care clinics and like urgent care clinics. It's happening really like in a widespread way. On a personal level, my mom and I were really proud to be an intimate part of making a film that came out last year called Zarowski v. Texas, following the heroic women in Texas. Amanda Zarowski, who was the, you know, name lead plaintiff, but, you know, more than a couple dozen others who had been denied either the medically necessary care that their providers knew they needed to save their lives, to save their future fertility, to protect their health, or the providers who were told, you actually can't do your job. You actually can't abide by your Hippocratic oath. You actually have to defy what ethically and morally you know is right. And so in Zarowski v. Texas, you know, following these women who suffered like horrific consequences, Amanda, who has lost the ability to carry children naturally, you know, other women who have suffered also lifelong health consequences, you know, doctors who now feel like the ongoing ricochet effects of having not been able to provide the care that they needed, these really just fundamental American heroes who shouldn't have to be heroes in America in the 21st century, and yet we are requiring them to do so, who lost the case in Texas but have continued to speak up and speak out about their experiences, you know, both to provide, I think, community and solidarity to other women, not only in Texas, but in my original home state of Arkansas, mm-hmm. in Alabama and Louisiana and Idaho and other states with really restrictive abortion bans, and also for the medical providers to have a better sense of sharing their experiences, trying to help kind of also provide community and solidarity for their colleagues in Texas and in other states to be able to make the decisions that they know are right, more quickly than maybe their hospitals have like gotten through all the legal loopholes to be required, but what they know is necessary to save a woman's life or a woman's health.
Mm-hmm. Chelsea, I am curious about the kinds of students you encounter at Columbia. Like, what type of person goes into public health in times that are as uncertain and challenging as these? Like, what are your students like, and like, what drives them?
Yeah, so this past year, I had the real privilege of guest lecturing in, you know, some friends' classes and didn't kind of teach any classes directly, partly because I was trying to have real space to continue to support the films, Zarowski v. Texas, and some of the other work that we've been doing in response to this moment, to, as I colloquially tell my kids, and they're like, what do you do, Mom? I'm like, I try to help, like, stop bad things from happening and help good things happen wherever possible. It's like recently how I describe, like, all of my work to my kids. But I was really struck by the students I did encounter this year who are still just so indefatigably optimistic, like, are not naive about the challenges around the world. And so many of the students I encountered this year are from outside the United States, have come here to study. Well, thankfully, they still had the student visas that permitted them to do so, and very much, like, had this deep sense of, yes, mission and purpose, but also, like, wanting to be politically aware, whether that was cognizant of the different political dynamics in this country or of the different politics in the UN system and how that might affect their ability to work on famine relief around the world, or trying to gain kind of political fluency, even in American context, that might help them better understand what was happening, you know, in their community or in their country, their region, you know, halfway or further around the world. And I think that's different than when I started teaching, gosh, like, 14 years ago, 15 years ago, of the sense of, like, oh, I just need to understand, like, this specific part of epidemiology, or I just need to understand kind of the specific history of, like, what we know works or doesn't work to help protect pregnant women, to pick up on our last conversation. There's now, like, a much greater, I think, sense of, oh, if I want to do public health work, or if I'm, you know, doing, like, a joint, like, degree, like an MD, MPH, a joint kind of medical and public health degree, I also have to be mindful of all the other forces and factors that can influence what work I might be doing, like what crisis I might be responding to, or kind of where we might really have learned about something that works and we need to kind of push further on it, or where we're learning there's a better way to do something, we need to adopt that, that we don't just do that in isolation. It's not just, like, in our clinic or in our public health program, or if we're working through schools, like, in an academic setting. Politics definitely, like, plays a role in shaping what's possible, what's probable, what might have to be worked around, what might have to be convinced, what might have to be co-opted. And I think that's been a big different. So deeply optimistic, like this belief of like my energy, my time, my education is going to enable me to make a real positive difference. And also a much greater awareness that to be able to do that, I have to be mindful in like an ongoing way of the political context in which I'm operating.
Well, Chelsea, we're going to go into some like news of the day stories that have to do with public health. Would love to
I'm
have
ready.
You participate. Amazing. Okay.
I'm ready.
They're not happy stories. They rarely
Shocking.
Are.
Shocking.
I know. Okay. Last year, Florida Republican Congresswoman and co-chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus,
yes.
Kat Kamick, went to the emergency room for an ectopic pregnancy, but struggled to get the care she needed because she was in Florida. And Florida has a 6-week abortion ban that had just gone into effect. The medical staff were not sure if they would face legal ramifications if they provided her with the help that she needed to expel her non-viable pregnancy. She was eventually able to get the care she needed, but the Congresswoman blames fear-mongering on the left for her challenges of getting care. But experts have explained that since Florida's laws do not define an ectopic pregnancy, it makes restrictions murky and difficult for medical professionals to navigate. Chelsea, what was your reaction to this story?
So I read that story in the Wall Street Journal, too. And I, of course, first am thankful that she's okay and that she is pregnant again and has had a healthy pregnancy, and I'm grateful that she was able to get the care that she needed then. It also clearly is accessing, you know, the good prenatal care that I would hope every woman in our country is able to access so that they're able to have, you know, a healthy pregnancy. And that if something, you know, goes awry and there's a moment where that pregnancy isn't as healthy as we all would hope, that she's able to get the care that she needs because of that ongoing good prenatal care. And also, I thought that the kind of mental and moral gymnastics require to blame the left for fear-mongering around a law that she had been instrumental in helping to both advocate for and then corral votes for and ultimately pass, and that she had opposed the Florida referendum last year that would have once again given women in Florida the ability to access reproductive care and providers the clarity to actually be able to provide health care, including when an abortion was the type of health care that a woman would need to protect her life and her health. Because, like, you know, State Representative Comics, like, ectopic pregnancy would have killed her if she had not gotten the care that she needed. You know, just illuminates to me once again the challenge of engaging in like an evidence-based, fact-based debate when there's a side that has no interest in engaging with facts or evidence, including an inability or an unwillingness to understand or to take responsibility or even to ask the question, like, what her own actions, what role those actions may have played in that moment of enormous stress, which, again, like, I could not even imagine. I've never been in a situation like that, where maybe not in that moment of stress, but once she thankfully got the care that she needed, that she was unable to reflect on, oh, well, we passed this law that, as you said in your question, like, was purposely murky to actually create the exact type of situation that she found herself in, where even when, like, there is no safe way to deliver an ectopic pregnancy will never, like, result in a healthy child and a healthy mother after that healthy child is delivered. Like, there is no world in which, like, that is ever a biological, physiological reality. And no amount of prayer, I say as someone who goes to church every Sunday, is going to effectuate that. Like, that she couldn't make the connection, or again, was unwilling to make the connection of, like, oh, I helped put myself in this situation.
Right.
I helped put other women in this situation. I helped put doctors in this situation. Is, I think, if she's unable to recognize that, like, how can we ever have like a coherent conversation with
right.
all of the men totally. Or the women who are never in that
right.
kind of moment of trauma?
It's like, how do you get that close to the point and then just miss it? You know, like
willfully, it's willful.
Yeah. And it's
Alexa, yes.
Yes. Because she has to see, like, it felt like such a dodge reading the Wall Street Journal and the way that she tried to spin it. It was like, are you spinning medical facts? Like, what a bad spot we're in.
But like, we started off this conversation talking about like vaccines and vaccinations, thankfully, like that our children have still been able to access those vaccines, and providers have been able to give our children like the life-saving vaccines. Cause like, I don't want my kid to get measles or rotavirus or anything else that thankfully we're able to now like protect kids against because of immunizations. I mean, we have a Health and Human Services Secretary, RFK Jr., who actively lies about vaccines every day, it seems, mm-hmm. these days. Mm-hmm. So we are living in a moment where, in the reality of those old ads around like the Holiday Inn Express, right, where like the pilot is flying the plane and they're like, wait, do you know how to fly this plane? He's like, don't worry, I sat at Holiday Inn Express last night. Right? Or like the surgeon, they're like, wait, you've been in our operating room before? And he's like, don't worry, I slept at a Holiday Inn Express last night. It's like, you know, nothing matters, right? Yeah. Except for whatever their ideological, like anti-vaccine, anti-women's health, you know, kind of driving force.
Chelsea, speaking of RFK and vaccines, the Immunization Advisory Committee is scheduled to meet today to discuss vaccines. Yes. Including COVID, RSV, and influenza.
Yes.
You may remember earlier this month, RFK Jr. fired all 17 expert members of his vaccine advisory committee and replaced them with a couple of quacks. He thought this would surprise nobody, considering his track record of peddling vaccine skepticism and lies. But this week, Republican Senator Bill Cassidy seemed like he was caught off guard by Kennedy's selections. Cassidy is the chairman of the Senate Health Committee, a physician, and claims to be a strong proponent of vaccines, but he voted to confirm Kennedy anyway. Now, Kennedy promised him he would not disband or remove any of the members. Turned out to be a lie. So on Tuesday, Cassidy called for a delay of the meeting until the panel is fully staffed with more robust and balanced representation as required by law, including those with more direct relevant expertise. Otherwise, ACIP's recommendations could be viewed with skepticism, which will work against the success of this administration's efforts.
Well, so, I would quibble a little bit at your last point, Alyssa, because I think that RFK Jr. exactly wants there to be ongoing confusion and disorientation around vaccines and vaccinations. I think he's not at all troubled by there being kind of pushback against whatever this deeply ill-qualified ACIP may recommend. Partly, I would say, one, because he's already gone over the heads of ACIP, right? I mean, he recommended a few weeks ago that pregnant women not get the COVID-19 mm-hmm. vaccine over—
Which is, like, so crazy.
Over the recommendations of the completely well-qualified, you know, preeminently, like, stocked with— you know, people who I think collectively had published like more than 1,000 papers on vaccines and vaccinations.
Right.
So he already went against their recommendations. I don't think he has any sense of any responsibility to kind of anyone, again, except like his ideological, non-fact-based, non-evidence-based anti-vaccine stance, which also parenthetically has made him a lot of money. And so he was claiming without evidence that the 17 members of ACIP had, you know, rife conflicts of interest. I'm like, well, what about your conflicts of interest? Like, you made a lot of money off of peddling, like, you know, falsehoods and vaccine claims that have been debunked like multiple times. And yet he continues to inject them into the conversation. Like, even I can't remember if it was like last night or this morning, his long Twitter thread about like vaccines that was once again deeply like populated with either outdated claims, you know, things that maybe were true like 25 or 30 years ago, but are no longer, and things that have never been true. But again, like facts don't matter to him. Mm-hmm. And certainly public health doesn't seem to matter to him. I mean, he is, you know, like everybody needs to make the choices that are right for themselves. Everybody should have a wearable device. Everybody needs to like know how to optimize like their own health. Like, all right, like I agree. Like everybody needs, you know, more information always to be able to make the right choices for ourselves and our family. And also that information should come from experts and not like, you know, your Holiday Inn Express, like feeling.
Well, it's like what is interesting to me about the way that like medical misinformation is being peddled by this administration is that like they usually have me for the first like three steps of the premise.
Yeah.
And then the solution that they propose is like batshit insane, where it's like, yes, we should all, like you said, Chelsea, like we should all be monitoring our own health. And it's important to like take preventative steps to prevent illness and disease to the extent that you can. Step three, so buy a wearable device. What?
Right.
Who's selling these wearable devices? Like, who's profiting?
And how can we all afford them?
And that's the thing. Exactly. They don't understand. They don't see themselves as guardians of the public health, right?
No.
This is all like personal health care. That's like, it's like goop. You know, they're like, well, this is what you should do and how you should take it. But they're not, they aren't spending any attention on public health.
But also, you know, this administration's actually trying to roll back clean water standards, clean
that
air
too.
Standards, like make asbestos, like make America great by asbestos, or make asbestos great again. Like, you know, like asbestos fits like cleanly, awkwardly into kind of the MAGA nomenclature.
That's true.
You know, they're trying to really retrench on like food safety and food inspection, you know, most notably on dairy products, again, because like RFK Jr. thinks like raw milk is great. And I'm like, actually, I don't want my children to die of bovine tuberculosis. Like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I would like that to not happen. Or to have like, you know, less quote unquote, like onerous, overbearing, like fruit and vegetable inspection. You're like, actually, like, I don't want anybody to die of salmonella either.
Yes. Like, does my wearable device say, like, you are puking. You are puking from salmonella. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so I just, I also don't want, like, red and yellow food diet in food. Great. And also, like, that's not what is going to kill more people.
Yeah.
Like, totally. What is going to kill more people is if, like, we stop food safety or we, like, stop, like, monitoring chemical effluent into water, which, oh, by the way, like, RFK Jr. used to care about, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
What?
It's really frustrating. And bringing it back to what we started the conversation with about, like, reproductive health, like, foodborne illnesses are particularly dangerous to pregnant women and to their fetuses and to little babies. And it's like, I don't know. It's just very, it doesn't make any sense.
You know, the challenge, again, on like food safety is like a lot of states don't have the architecture or the ready to like flip the switch expertise on a lot of food safety issues because like the FDA and the USDA have done that work. Like I live in New York. I don't know where the two of you live, but like I live in New York. Like New York doesn't have like built-in meat and poultry safety inspection and inspectors like ready to go if we really stop in any meaningful way. I mean, we haven't yet stopped yet, but like they're talking about it if we stop like meaningful food inspection. So it's also like to your point, I think you said earlier, like it's like a false premise and promise of like, oh, like, well, don't worry. Like just that the states are going to do it. And you're like, but how?
Yeah,
like,
right.
With
exactly.
What authority and experts and resources?
Yeah. What building? Like, where is it? Where? Like who's doing
where?
It? Yeah.
And like, I think it's pretty great that like we have a system that detects salmonella in like human food or pet food, that we have a system that detects like bird flu. And so we're not going to die of that. Oh, well, maybe we will.
I mean, maybe. It sounds like a simple premise, but you know, we're living in strange times. Chelsea, I want to end on a fun question since we kind of were talking a little doom and gloom. You have chosen the healthy route, the good route, and stayed away from Instagram and TikTok, which, like, I salute you for that. What do you spend your time doing instead of doom scrolling? Tell me what that life is like, and what are you watching any TV shows, or, like, how are you dissociating from, like, what's going on right now?
I read a lot of mysteries.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I mean, when I'm not – I read a lot of, like, public health stuff, like, for – work and curiosity, right? So I listen to a lot of radio, and I do read the newspaper every day, so I don't, like, disassociate myself from the news. But yes, I don't engage in doom scrolling. But I spend a lot of time with my kids. I go for long runs, and I read mysteries are the three main ways that I think I maintain homeostasis. And I love mysteries because there's a beginning, middle, and end. There's not sort of this, like, existential, and then what happened?
Right.
And at least in the genre that I read, like, the bad guys are always caught.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's like justice and accountability. Right? Like, that. I want to live in that world.
Sure.
And so that's what I do instead of doom scrolling.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's pretty smart. So I'm guessing you're staying away from Raymond Chandler, probably.
Do I know who that is?
Raymond Chandler is the mystery writer who it's like noir.
Noir. Oh, yeah.
And at the very end, it's like, yes. You know what? Forget it. It's Chinatown. Yeah. Like, that's the vibe.
Don't tell my dad that I didn't recognize that because he loves Raymond Chandler books.
Funny.
I just read this series set in northern Minnesota.
Ooh.
Which was great. Iron
What's
Lake
it called?
Is the first one. It's about a detective, Cork O'Connor. I love them. William Crane Cooper is the writer. I also love reading mysteries set in other parts of the world, not because I'm impervious to the fact that, you know, we have stuff that happens in New York City that also needs solving, but just I love learning about Tokyo or Istanbul or Iron Range region of Minnesota. I love learning about different parts of our country and our globe, like, through the prism of mysteries as well.
Oh my gosh. I'm gonna have to check that series out. My brother literally lives, like, in northern Minnesota. And his family. So I mean, maybe I'll give it to them for Christmas and be like, hey guys, check it out. Let me know if
Chelsea recommended it.
Chelsea's book club.
And also get your vaccines.
Completely, like, every Chelsea's book club sticker on the cover says, get your vaccines in, like, big letters, and then underneath it says Chelsea's book club in little letters.
I know. You know, we used, like, in because I took my kids to vote last week. We voted early in New York. And I love that in New York City, at least we get these, like, future voter stickers.
Oh, that's cute.
And I was actually thinking how, like, when we all got our first COVID vaccines, we got, like, I vaccinated stickers. And I want to bring those back. Like, I want to walk around when I get my flu vaccine. You know, if we actually have a flu vaccine this autumn, which I do think is, like, maybe a big question mark. But if we do have a flu vaccine that I will proudly be getting, I want to bring that. I think there's something about, like, there is something about the stickers, like the small, like, symbolic statement of, like, I believe in, like, engaging in our civic life, and I voted. I believe in engaging in our civic life, and I got vaccinated my kids.
Yeah. I'm, like, a big needle phobe. I get my vaccines like I should, but I, like, am a huge baby about needles, and I need a sticker.
So you also get your ice cream.
Yes.
You also get your ice cream.
Like, she gets her single M&M.
I get one single M&M. That's my reward. Chelsea Clinton, thank you so much for joining us. This is a great conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Chelsea. And thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you so much.
Hysteria is brought to you by the NPR Politics Podcast.
When it comes to keeping up with what's going on in our democracy, there are good sources of information, and there are sources of information that are just going to make you scared and nervous or angry, and you're not going to have good information at the end of all of those feelings. Mm-hmm. NPR Politics Podcast is one place that you can go to get good, reliable information about what goes down in Washington and what every decision there might mean for me and for you.
And they have a great assortment of rotating hosts who come to give us the tools, Erin. They give us what we really need to know, and I find them to be exceptionally smart. Every day, the NPR Politics Podcast team will focus on one thing and boil it down to 15 minutes or less. Think of it as your political multivitamin.
Listen now to the NPR Politics Podcast, only from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C., with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people whose doomsday bunker dress code is Western elegance.
Indeed.
Claire gets it. There was a TikTok, Alyssa, I don't know if you're on the side of TikTok, but there's a TikTok that went viral this week of a woman who is about to attend a Western elegance wedding, and she's running she's like, hey, everybody, let me know what I should wear. She runs a few outfits by people, and they don't fit the dress code. She seems like a nice lady in the like video. Like, I want to be encouraging to her, but they don't fit the dress code. And everybody is like, no, it's not Western elegance. Anyway, I'm not sure I know what Western elegance is.
I feel like Western elegance is like a tastefully appointed cowboy hat and some well-cut denim.
I feel like a romantic, like Rebecca Taylor ensemble,
yes.
like a long Rebecca Taylor dress that has like
some
florals,
floating with some cowboy boots.
Yeah, like maybe a little neckerchief, like an Hermes. Yeah. Like,
guys, I think I could do it.
Maybe a little fringe on your bag.
I'm not fringe for me, but I could do the other stuff.
Okay. Anyway, well, if you're coming to my doomsday bunker, Alyssa, there's a dress.
I'll bring my Western elegance.
All right. So we are, you know, there's a lot going on in the world, to say the least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, U.S. and Iran tensions are heating up. World War III memes, kind of unavoidable at this point. Pod Save the World is a great resource if you want to dive deep into the nuances of, like, what's going on over there and what it means, what the history is. Tommy Vitor and Ben Rhodes, heard of them. They cut through all the noise, break it down really well. I am not the messenger for that, and I do not want to be the messenger for that, but no. I highly recommend relying on Pod Save the World to keep up to speed about what the fuck Donald Trump is doing over there. And you can catch this week's episode of Pod Save the World on YouTube, obviously, or wherever you get podcasts. So on that note, we know that there's stuff going on in Iran. We are, you know, watching and listening to reports about what's happening around the world. You can't help but think, like, what would happen? What would I do if facing the same circumstances that these people in Tehran are facing? What would happen if there was some sort of like influx of military activity, right? And, you know, it got us thinking, you know, we've been thinking about prepping. We've talked about it. We've talked about it as, like, what are we doing to prep?
Yeah.
But we never really talked about the world of prepping and how prepping, you know, is actually a pretty big industry in this country. And it's kind of expanding to include groups that weren't normally a part of it. Preppers, if you haven't heard the term before, it's not people wearing Lacoste polo shirts. It can be. You can wear a Lacoste polo shirt while prepping, but that's not. You're preppy, not a prepper. Preppers refers to people who are anticipating an emergency and make advanced preparations for it, typically by stockpiling food, ammunition, and other supplies. Or if you're like me, you know, because you've watched some episodes of National Geographic's Doomsday Preppers.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So there's, like, you know, it's funny because as a kid, I don't remember feeling like we were prepping for anything. I mean, we had like a canning room. Because everybody in the country has a room where, like, you put the canned vegetables or whatever that you can yourself, obviously, right? A giant freezer full of meat, of course. that was just, like, our normal lives. I never thought as, like, a young adult about, like, prepping. And I think the first time I encountered, like, oh, you need to actually, like, prepare for an emergency was in 2012 for Hurricane Sandy, because I was in New York City when Hurricane Sandy hit. Alyssa, like, what was your first encounter with, like, prepping as an industry or as, like, a practice?
My first practice prepping was It was like 1990, and we had a terrible snowstorm and ice storm that came through in September. And so the leaves were still on the trees.
Whoa.
And so our town was truly immobilized. Like for 7 to 8 days, people couldn't really leave their houses. There was no power. You know, like there was one restaurant that had a generator where people would meet and you could have some food. But like we slept. My dad had the grill out. We took the food out of the freezer. We ate what was possible on the barbecue.
Outside?
The four of us.
So he was like, yes, snow barbecuing?
Yes.
I kind of love that image.
And then we all slept in the living room because there was a fireplace in our sleeping bags. And for those 8 days, we had to rotate, you know, which toilet you used because you couldn't flush any of them.
Mm.
And oof. I think the town pool opened in the middle of this weird storm. The town pool opened for people to use the pool showers to clean themselves.
Oh, wow.
And so that was a very, like, I remember that, like, if my, like, several of my friends from high school listen to this podcast, they will remember the, like, 7 days that Rhinebeck stood still. And after that, I think it was a lot like, you know what? Make sure we have an extra propane tank mm-hmm. for the gas. Like, it's those things you start thinking of.
Right.
Like, always have an extra propane tank for the gas grill. You know, have extra things to eat in the basement, mm-hmm. you know? And like now, if you went to my parents' basement, it is prepped, Erin. Mm-hmm. It's an extra fridge now down
yeah.
there, extra freezer down there. It is. And I think for all of us post-COVID, we all develop some sort
of prepper mentality.
Prepper mentality.
Right.
Yeah, like things you couldn't get that you know that you want to be able to have. And now, you know, mm-hmm. I always have a little. Also, I developed a I am constitutionally incapable of taking the last thing on a shelf after COVID.
Mm, yeah. I do that
you
too.
Know
every
I mean?
Time I go to the grocery store, I'm like, I'm going to grab a can of black beans and some chickpeas. Like, because, like, staples
yeah.
that are shelf stable.
And they're good for 2-3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, when you think about preppers, you know, the industry used to be the industry of like selling prepared prepping kits and like the community of people who
yeah.
like talked about prepping were sort of like, I'm gonna look weird Mormons, like bunker
yeah.
Mormons, and like militia separatists. Sort of.
Totally. Like, I mean, like, look, there are a lot of commercials on Fox News for meals ready to eat, MREs.
Right.
Like, all sorts of, like, jump start equipment.
But I
mean,
think
it's,
a lot of
it
the,
is.
To be fair, I think a lot of the Fox News stuff is aimed at old people who are so repugnant that nobody wants to help them and they are going to eventually need to take care of themselves.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it's that's what we think of. People who are like, the government's coming for me. People who have read the Turner Diaries. You know what I mean? People who are like.
You know, you think, like, Waco and Branch Davidians and stuff like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Well, I also think in the 90s, there were enough government actions against far-right militias that
yeah.
went terribly sideways and
mm-hmm.
that really instilled a lot of fear in people. They were handled terribly by the government. And as a result, it like further radicalized some of these like doomsday prepping
yeah, absolutely.
Militia separatist types. But since then, I think especially since this series of like climate catastrophes like Hurricane mm-hmm. Sandy hitting New York City.
Big one.
Yeah, like things like hurricanes that regularly hit, you know, along the Gulf and in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what happened in Asheville, North Carolina, the hurricane that dumped water on that. Like
wildfires.
Wildfires. Like the fires in the Palisades and in
mm-hmm.
Altadena this January. Like I had prepared an earthquake kit because you have to have an earthquake kit up
mm-hmm.
here. But I was really, as I was like, you know, after the fires, kind of regrouping and making sure we had everything we needed for the next time something crazy happened, I found that there were a lot of resources that were aimed like at groups outside of a typical prepper group. So like there's
mm-hmm.
a group on Reddit, there's a subreddit called 2X,
oh, yeah.
2X Preppers. So the regular preppers subreddit started in 2010 and has 546,000 members. 2X Preppers was founded in 2022 and it focused on the specific prepping needs of women and it has nearly 200K members. Like that's a lot of people who are like specifically like, I'm a lady. How do I do this? The 2X Preppers community helps like push back against the masculine prepper archetype. Not everything is called tactical. it provides like a female LGBT trans inclusive place for discussing everything from like stocking up on birth control, which is probably not something that a Mormon led prepping company would be like.
Probably not. But I will say I do have a stockpile of estrogen patches.
Oh, that's smart. That's smart. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's also interesting. I've seen posts on there about from like trans people or people who are trans, like in the process of going, like undergoing hormone therapy. And there's been a lot of discussion about like stockpiling hormones and like how to store them long term and like where do you get them and like how, you know, resources to like whatever. And I found it pretty interesting. They also have a no fear mongering policy, which is something that sets it apart from the other subreddit. Although, like, I do like lurk on 2X Preppers, and I know there's like a no fear mongering policy, but there is like kind of a subtext of like everything is sort of like, how do I make sure I have enough baby formula? You know, it's like just the, just the post existing kind of like the subtext is like, should you be afraid of this? But whatever, that's neither here nor there.
Well, and Erin, I also recently read the profile by the 19th News of two different Black women preppers who are gaining popularity for sharing tips on self-sufficiency and risk assessment and showing a different perspective on prepping than the aforementioned white male militia-coded content that can dominate the space. Zanny Sunshine and Sharon Ross, a.k.a. Afrovivalist. Sunshine uses the hashtag prepared, not scared to encourage her followers to use prepping as something empowering, not stressful, which I just, that's how I feel. You know, ever since I think between the fires, they're just things that I know now, right? I really cannot rescue more cats than I can carry, okay? I told DK we max out at three cats because if I have to evacuate, the three cats is what I can carry. having food for them. You know what I mean? Like, there are just things, knowing where the documents are. There are things that you maybe didn't think about a year ago that now you're like, in the event that you might panic, it's all there and ready to go. And I think that those are the tools that they give you, you know, have a radio that is battery operated so you can crank operated, any of the above, so that you can always, those are the most reliable ways to get information if you have to. So it's like, I just find it really empowering.
One thing that's cool about a crank operated radio, if you have kids, is you can give one of your kids the radio and be like, here, crank this for a while, and it keeps them occupied. it's a great way for them to like blow off some steam. Crank this radio up. We need this. You know, it's funny, like we still have like our earthquake kit. We have like our water, you know, the amount of water that we need. I even have like a prepper kit for my car. Because like with
is that some flares?
Yeah. And I have like a little like a little jumper thing that I could operate myself in like an emergency. I have like some valve stems. Like I have like a bunch of I have like a glass breaking tool. Yeah. In case I got like trapped
I might need a little I might need a little bit more car prepping. Yeah. I've been wanting to get one of those like flash, it looks like a flashlight, but it also, you can charge your phone and also you can jumpstart your car with it. Have you seen these?
No, I've not seen that. It sounds like witchcraft.
Well,
it's like,
perhaps
it's funny because I think also people lose track of the fact that like it can be so hot, like it's so hot right where you are right now, right?
So hot.
It can be so hot that if your car, what happens if your car breaks down on the side of the road? What are you going to do? Like, do you have enough water to drink?
Melt.
Like, do you, how are you going to, are you going to, are you safely able to walk somewhere? Do you have like shade for the walk? Like, are you able to, you know, there's things that I think that I wouldn't necessarily have thought about in the climate even of my childhood, where it's like, yeah, if you get trapped in your car, you got to make sure you have water in case it's like 100 degrees and you have to walk like 3 miles.
Also, can I tell you the craziest thing why you should always have a bottle of water in your car?
Right.
I almost choked to death on a pretzel. I really did.
Okay, you and George H.W. Bush.
I know. I was so hungry and I just put it and I went down the wrong way and I had to pull over. And luckily I had some like lame half-consumed bottle of water in the back. But I was like, I was struggling. And ever since, I always have a bottle of water in the car now.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
See?
You know,
we're just paying lessons forward.
I know. Yeah, I'm going to say this though. I feel like the market for like, and the awareness of like looming disaster is such that there's like a real market for like pre-made disaster preparedness kits.
Right. I like to make my own.
I feel like I don't want to begrudge anybody who's like, you know, getting money by like selling those things. But it is like way cheaper to just make your own. Like, yeah. You can find lists on for now. You can find lists on government websites. I think FEMA has like a good list of things
they
that should be on your disaster preparedness thing. I have a friend that just texted me who was like, I'm reading all about bugging in, like not bugging out. Like bugging in.
What's bugging in?
Bugging in is just like holing up in your house and staying there. Like if shit goes sideways, basically like going into that Jeff Bezos, Lauren Sanchez, impenetrable fortress of your home and like living there for a while.
Okay.
Which
I could do that.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you know any diehard preppers?
No.
Really?
I'm probably more preppy than the rest.
Do you have a cellar, like a storm cellar that you can go into?
We have a basement that is a proper basement.
Okay. So
when we get the tornado warnings, I can grab the three cats, we go down to the basement, and it has a door to a Bilco to the outside and the whole thing.
You know, being on TikTok has exposed me to the fact that there are people in like Tornado Alley that literally have like a hatch door in their garage. That's great. And there's like a little, it's like, get ready with me. Will I like prepare the like tornado shelter for the, And like, I've seen videos of women being like, here's like a bunch of pillows. You know, it'll be like just a kind of bare bones space. Mm-hmm. And there'll be like two games for the kids to play and some flashlights and stuff. I feel like I would feel better if I had one. Just like
I know.
Like,
you don't have a basement.
We don't have a basement. Not in this part of the world. Basements are not really standard.
Well, if anything feels real like it's coming, you just head my way. Enough basement room for everybody.
Oh, that's really nice. I mean it's like I've spent so much time in Utah also that I've like been around. It just there's a vibe there where you're like, I should buy more beans. You know, because there's like this feeling of like isolation and scarcity, no matter where, even if you're like in Salt Lake City, there's like a feeling of like, oh, there's a possibility.
It's the landlockedness of it all.
It's like landlocked and also locked in like mountains and desert. And it's beautiful. It is beautiful, but it's like kind of like impenetrable. Like the landscape is so kind of impenetrable. So do you think prepping is self-care?
Oh, definitely. It is, well, to me, self-care are things that help remove layers of anxiety. And so knowing that I have a plan for something is, it removes anxiety, and therefore I definitely think it's self-care.
Okay. And do you think that Trump gutting emergency support for places like FEMA, which for the time being is a good source for information, but do you think him gutting that changes your perspective on prepping?
Yeah. I mean, I think that an agency that has been responsible for the last 30 plus years for helping people get through terrible times and being something that people can rely on, that FEMA shows up in people's time of need. You know, you can't, that's not the case. And they haven't made clear what they will and won't be doing, right? So you do have to make sure you have your water and some paper towels and some food you can eat and some bandages. And, you know, it's like FEMA people, it's not just what FEMA provided. It was a convener, right? FEMA helped coordinate between local churches, between the Red Cross, you know, to get help to where people needed it. And, you know, FEMA was who a church could reach out to and say, we have room for 15 families and we can feed, you know, 100. And I think a lot of that is going to fall now to communities. To do themselves.
Literally, like,
so I do think.
Like Discord servers. Neighborhood Discord servers that are like, hey, does anybody need blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, like Facebook groups and like things like that are going to be, this church can.
Wouldn't that be funny if like Facebook's like next iteration is just being a replacement for FEMA? By like,
I mean, truly, like Erin, here's just like a great example of during Hurricane Sandy. I was with Craig Fugate, who was the head of FEMA. We're out by Breezy Point, and he looks around, head of FEMA, looks around. He goes, you know what? We got to get lights out here. We got to get lights and generators because what happens in the dark? Violence. Crime happens. Looting happens in the dark. And what he did was he called the movie production companies and was like, get your lights out here. And like the genius that is the people who are the preppers and the way that their mind works, the fact that Trump is just disbanding it is really, it's really shameful.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible resource to be frittered.
Yeah. It's really frustrating to kind of see it. But I also think that, like, that brings up an important point, which is, like, there's something refreshing about the 2X preppers kind of, mm-hmm. and like the more feminized version of prepping, because I think the old version of doomsday prepping was very like every man for himself. This is my fortress. Like I'm right. hoarding ammunition. Stay away from my family and my stockpile. But I feel like the type of prepping that we're seeing talked about more now is like about community prepping.
Yeah, I absolutely
agree. Where like everybody is getting, you know, taking care of their own shit, making sure they have enough water for themselves,
right.
but then also making sure their neighbors also have enough water for themselves and checking in on people and being like, hey, do you have do you need an extra, we have extra blah, 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 blah. Do you need this?
It reminds me of like when you talked about the message boards back in the day when there was all the formula shortages. Mm-hmm. And people would be like, you were like sending it to people across the country because you had it. I just feel like it's much more that vibe than like a, you know,
yeah.
I've got six guns and I'm protecting my land.
But we do pay taxes to a government that should probably be doing this.
Well, you know? I mean, that's like the fucked up part.
I know, it's like,
you know?
Okay, but like I really, it is inspiring to see, like in my community, like with the ICE raids and everything, it's really inspiring to see how much like women are stepping up and like, other people in the community are stepping up and like care in a very like caring forward, like mm-hmm. community care relationship, right? But like, we shouldn't have to do that, you know?
No, it's like, well, it's like the GoFundMe-ing of healthcare. Mm-hmm. Like it's we shouldn't.
Right.
People are resourceful and they are doing it. And it shows that lots of people in this country are very generous mm-hmm. and want to help.
Yeah.
And people who can help do help.
Yeah.
But like we do pay taxes for FEMA.
Yeah. It's like, what if we just had one big GoFundMe and everybody could use it for healthcare? Wouldn't that be cool?
Know?
What if we had one giant GoFundMe? It just feels like a sort of like, you know, a bubblegum and like paperclip solution to
yeah.
a systemic problem.
It is. It's not correct.
No.
But it's better than nothing.
It's not correct. It's better than nothing. And I think I'm glad we're moving past like bunkers and into like taking care of each other. I think that's
yeah.
probably a better version of prepping anyway. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Fatty 15. Alyssa, how important is healthy aging to you?
I guess it's pretty important.
I mean, you can
right?
age in a healthy way or not.
Right. I mean, like,
you're gonna
I'm going to age.
You're going to do it regardless.
So I'd rather be in good shape as I age. I'd like to have, you know, things working.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's pretty important.
Yes, it's pretty important. Like, you don't want to just be, like, your life is limited, right? You want to be able to do
I don't want to shuffle.
Yeah.
I want to have pep in my step.
You want to have some pep in your step. I am excited to share with you guys C15 from Fatty 15, the first emerging essential fatty acid to be discovered in more than 90 years. Based on over 100 studies, we now know that C15 strengthens our cells and is a key healthy aging nutrient, which helps slow biological aging at a cellular level.
In fact, when our cells don't have enough C15, they become fragile and age faster. And when our cells age, our bodies age too. This eventually led to studies finding the first new nutritional deficiency in 75 years, called cellular fragility syndrome, caused by a lack of the C15. As many as 1 in 3 people worldwide have low C15 levels and cellular fragility syndrome. To help fix cellular fragility syndrome and further support healthy aging, a team of doctors working in collaboration with the U.S. Navy spent over a decade to develop the pure, optimized, and bioavailable C15 ingredient in Fatty 15. Thankfully, Fatty 15 repairs age-related damage to cells, protects them from future breakdown, and activates pathways in the body that help regulate our sleep, cognitive health, and natural repair mechanisms that support our overall health.
Best of all, Fatty 15 comes in a gorgeous reusable glass bamboo jar, and the refills are shipped right to your door. I gotta say, when it comes to managing my own health, simpler is better, easier is better.
Definitely.
Shipping it to my door, putting it in a refillable pack, like hand it to me. Yes.
Yes. And just make it
exactly.
easy.
Exactly. And Fatty 15 makes it easy. Fatty 15 is on a mission to optimize your C15 levels to help support your long-term health and wellness, especially as you age. You can get an additional 15% off their 90-day subscription starter kit by going to fatty15.com/hysteria and using code hysteria at checkout.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that will need to get an entirely new personality now that the Karen Reed trial is over. And Caroline wrote that line. I have to say, Alyssa, have you fallen down the Karen Reed rabbit?
I know enough. I know enough to be conversant. I wouldn't say I've been Karen-pilled, but I know enough.
The more I learn about it, the more I get why it was such a, like, seductive case. Like, it was so clearly a cover-up, and, like, the cover-up was done by stupid people.
It was a cover-up done by stupid people. The fans wore pink. They were rabid. It had, like, you know, it had some sort of old-school OJ-ness to it.
Oh, yeah.
And the sensational, you know, people outside screaming her name. I mean, it was – and then the speech that she gave when she came out was
– yeah.
It was something
there
else.
There was something – I think you and I both, like, grew up in small-ish towns that had some, like, insular communities or whatever. And I think that one reason that the Karen Reed trial was so interesting to me is because I think every town that's small has a group of assholes that, like, band together and, like, bully people or try to take people down a peg or, like, back...
Yeah, you got to be on the right side of them.
Yes. In my town, the nickname that they were given by, I'm not going to say who, a member of my family, was the Country Club Mafia. Like, we had a country club in my town, which is, like...
Oh, we did not.
It's, like... But it's, like... It's a town of 1,000 people. Like, it's not like, oh, like, green space is at a premium and we need, you know, whatever. But we called them the Country Club Mafia. And there was something about, like, this group of, like, the Bryans, Albert, and Higgins, and, like, their wives and their cousins and blah, 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 that reminded me of that group of people. And I think that they were trying to, like, take Karen Reed down a peg because she was, like, smarter than them. And
maybe I don't know, but she won.
Yeah, she sure did. No announcements for the class this week, so we're just going to get right into Sandy Petty. Alyssa, do you want to go first? Sanity Corner, feeling petty this week.
It's a little Sandy because I was so excited last week when I sat my tush on my sofa to watch Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders to try for yet another season to do Thunderstruck, which I can't do. It's their dance. But I love it. And I get up and I try to pretend to do it. But I always feel sad because these women work like 10 jobs to be able to do it. Except, Aaron,
yeah,
the show took a turn this year. Mm-hmm. And I give the Dallas Cowboys and cheerleaders, whoever's actually in charge of the decisions of what gets to be in the show and what doesn't, they chronicled the journey of these women to be paid more.
Okay.
And it was exceptional. And it was we got to follow along on some of the Zooms where the sort of lead organizers would bring information back after meeting with the heads of the Cowboys. And we found out at the end, it was the news broke, and it was also in the last episode of the series, that they got a 400% pay raise.
Okay.
They fought and they won.
So how much do they make now?
$75 an hour.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty – I mean, they were making 15.
That's crazy.
But, like, you could show at the beginning – so there is sort of an interesting arc that you watch. This time, when they started off the season, they were showing us all of the perks that the cheerleaders get when they become cowboy cheerleaders. It's like, and here's the hair extensions. Like, there's a whole day that they go to where they're introduced to all of the sponsorship stuff that they have access to, which I think was trying to soften us up in the event that they didn't get anything
at the end.
That it's like, look at the free tans, look at the clothes, look at all this. And I was picking up what they were – I figured what they were doing.
Yeah.
But at the end, the thing that was – I think the most heartening I think Caroline and I share a favorite character in Jada, is that the women who fought the hardest were the women who were never going to benefit from it. They were all the fifth and sixth year veterans who were just doing it for all of the rookies and the other cheerleaders. And I just thought it was, fucking great.
Oh, well, I don't watch that show because I don't.
Okay.
I can't get over my disdain for the Dallas Cowboys as an organization. I like truly, I don't know. I feel like there's this kind of, I just absorbed it by osmosis. I just like don't like the Cowboys and I don't.
That's totally fair.
And like it's weird, but I have heard that the show is really good and the next time I need.
The Cowboys get no play.
Good.
It's only only show the, and actually they have such bad seasons that you're always just like sad for the girls that they're better than the players are.
That's fair. And I can support that 100%. And actually, you know, I have some friends that watch it and, you know, including you, who say it's like a really good show. I'm just waiting until I have like a gap in my like escapist media diet. Like right now, okay, this is my Sani Petty this week. Right now I'm watching Love Island USA. I feel like I am like one of those. Have you ever seen like a hamster on a wheel and they like trip and fall and they go all the way around the wheel? Like, I feel like that is, there's so much content. I'm like running to keep up. Like, I gotta watch tonight. They're going to Casa Amore and it's gonna get spoiled if I don't watch it right away. Like, over the weekend, I was literally, because I started late. They put shows out like every day of the week except Wednesday. And so like,
oh wow.
Yeah. So
that's a lot of episodes.
So much content. It is really hard for me to like have work life Love Island balance in my life. Because it's like I was literally like holding my phone while I'm like watching my kid, you know. So cuz you know they really waste your time in the show. Like they take forever to like announce things and like all the challenges take way too long and I don't really care to see. There was this one challenge where like they were spitting milk in each other's mouths and I was like, I don't care to see this. So like,
oh, that's
but
gross.
I had it playing so that I could hear it in case something interesting happened, right? But I was like, it's so much content, but right now that is what I need. I need a content to drown me. I need content that is like, remember the like being inside a bag of Skittles, you know? It's like I shouldn't be here. This isn't good for me. You know, I'm not going to feel good about this like when I'm all done with it, but I'm like just swimming in this bag of Skittles. And like I have a few thoughts, right? This year there is a character that is named Hoda that is like really divisive. Now, no spoilers, guys. I'm not totally caught up. And they're entering Casa Amore, which is this whole little thing. Anyway, this character named Hoda, who is one of the most emotionally abusive people I've like ever seen on TV.
Oh, no.
And there is like a group of Hoda apologists who are like, yes, queen, like go get your man, like blah, 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 blah. But like the way that she acted toward her first connection on the island and like the way that she yelled at him and became unhinged when things started kind of going sideways, it's like terrifying. I don't know. Like it is, wow. It is cluster B vibes, like very. She's very sinister, and she's very pretty, and she's very good at twerking. But she's like
twerking. They still do that.
Oh my god, they had a twerking competition. They had a twerking.
I thought
they
could like, all twerk. Very 10 years.
No,
ago.
They're all twerking still, and some of them are very good at it, including Hoda. But like, I just want to say that like part of my. This is maybe more of like an insanity corner because like the fact that there are that many people defending the way that she acted is just like crazy to me. If a man acted like that, he would be like sent home and canceled forever. And like I just, whew, it's good TV. It's good TV if you just want to watch something that you're like, oh, I don't know if this should be filmed. Like, but okay, it's crazy. All right, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you this week and every week for being my ride or die. We'd also like to thank Chelsea Clinton for joining us for a conversation about public health and her work as an advocate. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com is the email. Send us a note, send us a tip, send us a comment, send us your thoughts. Say hi. Hysteria will actually be dark next week, so we'll have extra time to read all your messages. But we will be returning on July 10th, so we will see you then. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusives like This Fucking Guy, our video series. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Claire Fogarty is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seguin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Claudia Sheng. And thank you to Daisy Cruz and David Tolles for production and marketing support every week. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hey, it's John. Last year, 2,500 people joined us at CrookedCon for conversations with some of the smartest organizers, least annoying politicians, and most interesting voices in politics about how to fix this mess. We're doing it again, November 5th through the 7th in Washington, D.C. with even more podcast panels and workshops. Plus, there will be drinks, which we'll need after the midterms, no matter which way they go. Get your tickets at CrookedCon.com, where we'll also announce the lineup. If you're a Friends of the Pod subscriber, a limited number of discounted tickets are still available. Get them before they run out. See you at CrookedCon.